What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s. It works for members like...
I'm Haley, and I've lost 100 pounds. Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects. It's all in one place.
Weight Watchers handles the insurance for you and offers affordable cash pay options. With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
I'm Mike, and I've lost 135 pounds. Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
I'm Sharia, and I lost 80 pounds on Weight Watchers. I realized that it would take more than a prescription to lose weight and feel good on a GLP-1.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last.
I can't imagine doing a GLP-1 without Weight Watchers.
Get started for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com/GLP-1.
Medications require eligibility and prescription. Patients on 15 milligrams of tirzepatide had an average of 21% weight loss in a 72-week clinical trial when paired with diet and exercise. First month as low as $25 with a 12-month MedPlus plan. Does not include the cost of GLP-1 medications.
If you're not already a Patreon supporter, please become one so you can access a great chat that I have with Leslie Lee and Breonna Joy Gray about Kamala Harris. It's a really great reaction to some of the stuff that she said to Charlemagne the God. And I think you'll really like it. So that's at patreon.com/The Katie Halper Show. Again, patreon.com/The Katie Halper Show. Hello, everyone. You're listening to The Katie Halper Show, and I'm your host, Katie Halper. If you like the show, please leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. And as always, remind you that this show could not happen without the support of our listeners. To support the show, visit patreon.com/The Katie Halper Show, where for just $1 a month, you can help make the show happen. And for $5 a month, you'll qualify for great bonus content, including an alternative podcast feed and rarely seen clips that aired on our live shows. Hello, 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 and welcome to The Katie Halper Show. So happy to be here with Leslie Lee. The third.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, you?
I'm good. I'm good. Happy to see you again. Happy to be here on the Katie Halper Show again.
Yes, it's great to see you guys. So we have a great show coming up. We have two guests. We have David Dayan of the American Prospect, the helpful wonk. No, I just tried to come up with a nickname for him. I don't know what to say. That's too basic sounding. The insightful wonk. Astute wonk, fearless wonk,
fearless,
yeah, the fearless wonk. That's good. The fearless wonk. And then we have Breonna Joy Gray, who is the host of the Bad Faith podcast. And before we bring either guest on, I just wanted to catch everyone up on about where we were in today's world, you know. And first of all, before I do that, though, what makes tonight different from every other night? Not that much, because I'm going to say, please subscribe, please share, please like, please join the Patreon, patreon.com/The Katie Halper Show. Again, that's patreon.com/The Katie Halper Show. And that way you'll get access to Patreon only content like this entire video. If you're here live, you're in luck because you're going to get access to the whole video. But if you miss it and it's not live, then you may have to become a Patreon. But that's because I provide hours of free content, right, Leslie?
Oh, Leslie, absolutely. Yes.
Leslie's good at defending me, better defending me than I am at defending myself when people complain. Yeah. But let's just start with what happened today. A funny thing happened in Washington, D.C. Brad, if we could play the CNN clip. This is Jake Tapper dropping some Tapper bombs on us. That's from this morning. Leslie, you have any, as I'm doing this, you have any good pop culture things you want to share with the people?
Well, I did check out the movie King Richard with Will Smith today about the Richard Williams, the father of Serena and Venus Williams. Very, very good movie. Very moving story. Very interesting story. Very political story to it. Because I don't know, they didn't talk about, it's like a lot about the racism they face, but instead of like a lot of these prestige movies, the racism they're talking about is from like the 50s, the 60s, slavery. Like, no, all the people who are, like, are watching this movie were the racists that Venus and Serena had to deal with. So I thought it was very interesting, very moving, just shows how you know, you have to have a delusional belief in yourself if you want to have any chance of making it in America,
right,
especially if you're Black.
All right. And where can people see that?
Oh, I think it's on HBO Max.
Okay, great. All right. So let me just, I'm just getting this one video ready because I want everyone to be caught up on what happened this weekend. Oh my God. There's an Alexa advertisement to I Only Have Eyes for You. That I'm just trying to spare you guys from listening to. I mean, you guys probably already know all about this, but it's sometimes good to hear it from.
Morning, Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia has just said he is a no on President Biden's cornerstone legislation, Build Back Better. Take a listen.
I cannot vote to continue with this piece of legislation. I just can't. I've tried everything humanly possible. I can't get there.
You're done. This is a no.
This is a no on this legislation. I have tried everything I know to do.
Joining us now exclusively to react, the man managing the legislation, Senate Budget Committee Chairman Bernie Sanders of Vermont. So Senator Sanders, Chairman Sanders, Senator Manchin says he can't get there. This is a no. He's tried everything. What's your reaction?
Well, I think he's going to have a lot of explaining to do to the people of West Virginia, to tell him why he doesn't have the guts to take on the drug companies and lower the cost of prescription drugs, why he is not prepared to expand home health care. West Virginia is one of the poorest states in this country. You got elderly people and disabled people who would like to stay at home, were forced into nursing homes. He's going to have to tell the people of West Virginia why he doesn't want to expand Medicare to cover dental, hearing, and eyeglasses. I've been to West Virginia a number of times, and it's a great state, beautiful people. But it is a state that is struggling. And he's going to have to tell the people of West Virginia why he's rejecting what the scientists of the world are telling us, that we have to act boldly and transform our energy system to protect future generations from the devastation of climate change. You know, what's going on now, Jake, in Washington is the big money interests are pouring hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars to make sure that we continue to pay the highest prices in the world for prescription drugs at the rich do not start paying their fair share of taxes. And I would have hoped that we could have had at least 50 Democrats on board who have the guts to stand up for working families and take on the lobbyists and the powerful special interests. We have no Republican support. Not one Republican in the United States Senate or the House, for that matter, is prepared to stand up to the drug companies or the insurance companies or the wealthy. I would hope we would have had 50 Democrats. Mm-hmm. But if that is the case, that I hope that we will bring a strong bill to the floor of the Senate as soon as we can and let Mr. Manchin explain to the people of West Virginia why he doesn't have the guts to stand up to powerful special interests.
Oh, so you want to vote on it no matter what, even if...
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. So we're going to bring in to react to this someone who I think will be very excited by what she just heard. At least one part of it. And we can break down that clip that we just saw. But let's bring onto the stage, the virtual stage, Breonna Joy Gray of Bad Faith Podcast, former press secretary to Senator Bernard Sanders. Hello, Bree.
Hello. My man said force the vote.
Basically, that's why I thought you'd like that. So Bernie wants to put people on the record, make it plain as it should be made plain. He wants basically Joe Manchin to have to say, I'm voting against dentures for you.
Yeah, sounds like a pretty good plan.
You know,
I mean, I'm no legislative expert, but Bernie certainly has been in Congress for many a year. I say if Bernie thinks force the vote is a good idea, maybe we should force the vote.
All right, I'm with you on it. Where are you, Leslie?
Yeah, I think he should do something other than nothing. I mean, the thing I've been thinking about is like they've spent like tens of millions of dollars just on ads for this Build Back Better deal. Like, how could they not do it? Like, that could have been a government plan in and of itself. The ads that are on CNN constantly about the Build Back Better plan.
It's really a travesty. And it's all, I don't even know if we got played or, I mean, we definitely got played, but did Biden get played? Did Schumer get played? Were they all playing us? Well, you know what? How about, I think it'll be interesting if we brought in another guest, because I would love to have not only his contribution to discussion, but also to have you, Bree, and our guest talk, because I think you guys come from interesting, somewhat overlapping, somewhat different worlds. And I'm speaking, of course, of David Dayan of the American Prospect, who is a tireless, fearless, would never block Bree journalist. Welcome, David.
I believe you called me what did you call me? Like the happy wonk?
Terrible, the nice wonk, the terrible, insightful, terrible name. Wonk. Then I think
now I'm on two podcasts at once. You're going to come at me from both sides here. I got to be on Bree's and yours.
Oh yeah, right, exactly. Now. Yeah.
This is just the Katie Halper show. I'm just a guest the way that okay. you are, David.
All right,
we're all
good.
Here at the grace of Katie Halper.
You're just over on the couch. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. You guys, we're going to unpack your dreams. So David, what do you think of what we've been talking about so far? What are your thoughts on the response to Build Back Better? Because one of the things that I appreciate about the way that you write about things is you kind of shatter the myth that certain things just can't be done, which I think Washington, D.C. likes to hide behind a lot. Mm-hmm. So what are people getting wrong about Build Back Better, about this discussion? Anything from Build Back Better to the clips that we were just talking about?
Well, you saw what Manchin said today about how he tried everything he possibly could to get to a place where he could agree for this bill. Manchin and Schumer had an agreement that they put into writing that then Schumer hid from everybody for about 3 months until it finally got released. And that was laid down on July 15th. And it leaked and we all can see it now. And I tweeted it today. Almost everything in that original agreement is in the bill. So these were Manchin's red lines. This is what he needed in order to move forward with an agreement. And just about everything that's in there is part of this bill. So and we can run down every single piece of it if you want. But, the very extreme forms of means testing that he wanted to throw onto this bill, they got mostly in there, except for the universal pre-kindergarten portion, which is something that Manchin himself implemented when he was in West Virginia. And he did it in a universal way, not in a means tested way. And that's the only reason that that's not the only means tested thing in the bill. Various forms of targeted spending, all the climate stuff that he demanded be in there, from everything from carbon capture to including hydrogen as a fuel that's favored along with electric, any revenue exceeding his top line going to deficit reduction, that's part of the bill. All of the limitations on taxes, some of them aren't even in there at all. And the others do not go above his red lines. Literally just about everything. The only thing that is different from that July agreement is the top line, which was $1.5 trillion in that agreement that he made with Schumer. And since then, he's expanded that to $1.75 trillion. So there's almost nothing that Manchin asked for that he didn't get. And at some point, you have to believe that if he's just going to keep asking for stuff and then having it given to him, only to say, also, I need this, 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 and this. In other words, it's hard for me to see, even though I'm hearing a lot of people say, well, he didn't, maybe he's just negotiating, maybe he didn't totally close the door. It's hard for me to see that this guy ever wanted to pass a bill at all. And the proof is that everything he asked for initially has been granted and he still isn't for the bill. So, that's kind of where we're at. And, this is something that took the time and effort of not just, the president and other senators, but like And Lee mentioned this before, just millions, tens of millions of dollars in ads and thousands of man hours from all these activists and media planners and filmmakers and everybody who put together those ads and who put together weird rallies with like cartoon bills dressed up on Capitol Hill. And like all of the, think about all of the things that were done, all of the waste of time that there was. When Manchin could have said, like, the day that Democrats won in Georgia, well, I'm not certainly going to pass, you know, a bill that has all of these various social programs in it. I mean, if he could have said that in January, we wouldn't be here.
Yeah.
David, what do you make
Jesse Smollett? What's his name?
What about him?
It's like the reason that part of the reason why what Jesse Smollett did is a crime is because it takes up valuable, allegedly valuable police time. So okay, like, can't we go after Manchin for taking up government time?
Free Jesse Smollett and imprison Joe Manchin.
Yes.
Not sure that is an actual
I mean, he lied. But, he basically lied. And because of that, a lot of work was done. Could have been applied elsewhere.
Anyway, go ahead, Bri.
Anyway, David, even more with an even argument, more serious point than mine, Brianna.
What do you make of this argument people are making that they should take out piecemeal popular parts of build, you know, extreme, that's all popular, but the most popular parts of Build Back Better and try to attach them to appropriations bills?
I mean, you could try, but as you know, the reason that all of these things were agglomerated into one bill is that is because of the refusal to end the filibuster. And right. Because of that refusal, we have these reconciliation bills. There's one in 2022, the 2022 fiscal year, which is the one we're doing now. There's actually one for the 2023 fiscal year that you could use before the midterms. You have to kind of push everything into those bills in order to get the 50 votes threshold. Rather than the 60 vote threshold, which is just not possible. Could you move these things? Mm-hmm. Could you move very popular things into an appropriation? You could try, but I mean, we don't have we've been running on continuing resolutions with no appropriations without any of that stuff for the past year. So you're saying
for one of the piecemeal fragments of the bill to pass with a appropriations bill, they would first have to get rid of the filibuster or reform the filibuster.
Right. I mean, you need 60 votes to pass appropriations, right?
So then my follow-up is that AOC, someone put this question to her and her response was lengthy, but ultimately she made reference to the idea that there might actually be a third opportunity next year, I guess, depending on what the parliamentarian said. Do you think there's any likelihood that this one could roll over?
This is not a question of the parliamentarian. I mean, you can definitely do another reconciliation bill before the midterms using the fiscal year 2023 budget. I mean, this gets very wonky, but the point is there's one of these things.
There's
one of these things every year, right?
She was arguing that there could be three bites of the apple, not two next year, if this one rolls
well,
over.
Well, there was this question of, yes, you could maybe do multiple reconciliation bills in one year. It's not clear to me that that's been fully determined. Possible. One thing you could say is that, all right, Joe, we'll get this down to just the child tax credit. That's all we're going to do. With this year's reconciliation bill. And then in next year's reconciliation bill, you could try to do something else. But look, until you get rid of the filibuster, you're just sort of grasping at straws to do these one thing or another thing and figure out how many of these bites of the apple you actually get. What, in a sane world, you'd have innumerable bites at the apple, right? And you could end the filibuster and you could pass these or try to pass these bills one by one by one. I mean, that's something that LBJ did, for example. The Great Society wasn't one bill, right? It was a number of different bills. Same with the New Deal. It was a ton of different bills before we had sort of this norm that the opposition party will block everything that the main party is trying to do. And so you have to resort to this reconciliation function.
And where are we on that filibuster? What's the latest?
Nowhere. They're not going to do it. I mean, Sinema said with respect to the voting rights piece that she's not inclined to do a carve out for voting rights. So if you're not going to do that, you're not going to do the rest. Now, the hilarious thing is that what did we just see pass that Joe Biden signed just in the past few days? It was an increase in the debt limit. Now, how did they get an increase in the debt limit without changing the 60 vote threshold? Well, 60 senators voted to make an exemption for the filibuster rule just for the debt limit. So you can do this, right? Yeah. There's, you know, they got 60 votes to end up doing that. But you can make the exemption if it's something that Congress deems important enough. Basically, the point is that Congress is not, you know, by its very rules, cannot do things until they can, right? They're not allowed to do anything unless they really want to, and then they can find a way around the rules. That's the bottom line.
Their hands are tied until
they
want them to not be tied.
Yeah, that's
right. At which point they somehow find some kind of scissor.
So what in your view is the pressure point that leftists should be pressing on right now? Should it be specifically, look, you got the 60 votes you needed to make a room for raising the debt ceiling, and here's an issue that's popular even in red districts. Why won't you 10 Republicans open that same door up so that we can get whatever it is? I don't know if it's child tax credit, prescription drug reform, a $15 minimum wage, LOL, just kidding, they're over that. Right. You know, because I'm not seeing a lot of framing that also includes the extent to which Republicans could be a part of this, except for vote blue, no matter who, neo-libs who like to yell at the left saying, why aren't you angrier at Republicans for not getting involved?
Right. I mean, I think there are two, I guess, options at this point. First option is something that Wyden has come out with just in the past few hours, which is a tremendously scaled down version of Build Back Better that is mostly the climate stuff, the prescription drug stuff, and the child tax credit, pretty much, with offsets, some sort of tax offsets. So that's, you know, maybe that's something that Manchin then agrees to. I don't know. I am skeptical. At this point, I don't think you could be living in this world without being skeptical that Joe Manchin wants to pass anything, right? So I'm going to deem myself completely skeptical of any of that until I see otherwise. The second thing, though, that I think progressives should be talking about are all of the, and I've been banging this drum for about 3 years now, is all of the things that a president can do without additional congressional authority.
Right.
This was what we called the day one agenda when we ran it in September of 2019 is when we ran this series, and we continued it through 2020. Yeah, prospect.org/day-one-agenda. You can find every one of our articles. And we've been tracking where the administration has actually moved forward on some of those things and where they haven't. And some of the big ones, they haven't moved forward, and we know about them. It's cancellation of student debt. It's effective legalization of marijuana by descheduling it under the Controlled Substances Act. There's a series of things you can do on prescription drugs that are actually probably more powerful than what's in the bill. There are plenty of things you can do. And there's a whole host of things you can do on climate. And some of them would be very punitive to places like West Virginia. So the problem that I have is that the Biden administration has never conceived of these executive action items as a tool to get Congress to do what it wants. In other words, hey, Joe Manchin, okay, you don't want to pass Build Back Better? That's fine. We're going to ban coal. Now, he can't actually ban coal, but he can do things to make it very hard to open another coal plant or continue another coal plant through the clean power plan, things like that.
More permits at this point in his administration than Donald Trump had?
Yes, he has. And in fact, they agreed to an offshore drilling site when they weren't bound by any authority to have to do so, and they claimed that their hands were tied. So I'm not saying that these things are going to happen, but you can imagine a presidency where, in reaction to one recalcitrant senator who is not willing to pass that agenda, you keep putting forward executive actions that go around Congress to the point at which that senator says, okay, well, let me try to fashion this my way, at least, because I don't want this wild, out of control president doing all this stuff. So that, to me, I think moving, first of all, unless you just want sort of a caretaker presidency until Donald Trump too in 2024,
yeah,
you better move on executive action, because there's, you know, you're going to get wiped out in the midterms. You don't seem to be able to do anything in the next year. And what legacy do you want to have, right? I mean, do you want to be a president that made life better for 46 million student debtors? Do you want to be a president that made life a little more bearable for millions of people who either through medical conditions or through just a desire to use recreational marijuana want to do it and don't want to be thrown in jail for it? I mean, there are all sorts of options. And those are just a few, by the way. If you go to our site, prospect.org/EAT or prospect.org/EAT, we have what is called the Executive Action Tracker, EAT, and that lists every one of the 77 items that we laid out in pieces, that in articles that Biden or any president could undertake, and whether or not they have done them. Now, I the last time I checked, I can go to it right now, actually, and tell you that of those 77 actions, 15 Biden has moved forward on, and 11 he's moved forward on them sort of.
David,
in a partial
give him
way.
Time. It's only been a year.
But you know, a lot of the ones that he has said no to are some of the most powerful ones, like canceling student debt, like using things to lower prescription drug prices, and so on and so forth, like banning fossil fuel drilling and mining on federal lands and oceans, which we just talked about. So there are a host of opportunities here. And it's just a matter of having a president who has that will. It's not even creativity, right? We know what he can do. It's not creativity. It's just will.
So how much of this is actually the rotating villain and on Biden, not as much on Biden as it is on Manchin?
Well, I mean, I think it ultimately you have to say it's on the Democratic Party. I mean, look, there's nothing that Joe Manchin said today that makes him any different a figure than he was for the last year, right? Like, right. We knew who Joe Manchin was. Joe Manchin today is the same Joe Manchin that he was, at the beginning of this year and previously and so on. Given the unwillingness to move forward on the filibuster, which Manchin is, of course, part of, given the thin margin in the Senate, the idea that you could just put forward a multi-trillion dollar bill and expect Joe Manchin to agree with it was, you know, in many ways, the original problem here. There was a failure to prioritize on the part of the Democratic leadership to say, we have Joe Manchin. Here's what we're going to be able to do. Instead, what they did, instead of, you know, the two choices were, let's do a few things, but do them very well, make them permanent, try to make them better down the road, or have everything in our agenda and just cut it down and cut it down and cut it down so that we have 50 half measures in this bill that hopefully before they expire in a year or 3 years or 5 years, depending on the program, we can somehow improve them and extend them. And ultimately, I mean, the kernel that I sort of agree with Joe Manchin about is that it's gimmickry to say that we're just going to pass the child tax credit for 1 year, as if every Democrat wants it to only last for 2022 and they don't want to extend it any further. Right. I mean, Manchin's right about that, right? So that the two things together, the fact that he is artificially constraining the things you can do by limiting the resources, and that necessarily means that you can only get a few programs forward, but the leadership and progressives as well wanted to have it all. They wanted to just sort of have 50 half measures that we could do and do a lot of things really poorly in the hopes that people would be so grateful that we did a lot of things poorly that we could stay in power and then somehow advance and improve those things down over time. It was not a good calculated strategy. Number one, it wasn't good to pass the bill, as Manchin is showing. Number two, I don't think it would have been good if the bill got passed, because you had all of these programs that like required on state participation. So you'd have to hope that red states would advance the Biden agenda by setting up their own pre-K program, setting up their own child care program, setting up their own long-term care program. There's no way they were going to do that. And you'd have to assume that Republicans would who would be, you know, presumably have a role in back in power, would then affirmatively vote to extend things that don't benefit their own constituents. I mean, none of the strategy behind Build Back Better actually made sense to me. And so, David, let me
explain to you. The trick is, you tell the country, you brag a lot about how you've halved child poverty. And then at the peak of the next wave of the global pandemic virus, you then double child poverty. That's right. The gag. That's, I think, right. What the secret.
Well, let me just say, you bring up a very important point. So we're going to lose the monthly payments. December 15th were the last monthly payments under the child tax credit you're going to see. Now, everybody's going to get a tax refund. Like, poor families are going to get a tax refund in January and February. And the second half of all those CTC payments, those enhanced ones, are going to be in that refund. So people are not going to feel that right away at the beginning of the year. But the thing they are going to feel at the beginning of the year is that on February 1st, student loan payments resume. And that's
people are definitely going to feel it.
Yeah, 46 million people, including people in our presence. And it's an average of $393 a month. So just add that on to your budget. Right. I mean, it's probably more for you. You went to law school, right? So
yes, but I can handle it. The world's tiniest violin for me. But yes, I will say, exactly. David, I wonder what you think. Some people are talking about a student debt strike. Some people are wondering why, if we knew this deadline was approaching back in June, there hasn't been more mobilization on this front. And some people are asking why the threat of a student debt strike isn't being weaponized by, if not Biden, because cynically we've all now believed that he never wanted anything good to happen anyway, but by progressives in the House, why aren't they participating in organizing the kind of strike that could potentially put pressure on corporate Democrats to do some of these policies that, you know, everybody except for them wants?
Well, it'll be very interesting. There was the Corinthian students participated in a debt strike way back. This is way back in like 2012, 2013, it was for-profit college network. They were totally defrauded. Those schools went out of business, and they were still on the hook to pay these loans that created worthless diplomas, things that literally in job interviews, the hiring managers laughed at when they saw a Corinthian college on the resume. So there a lot of these students participated in a debt strike. Flash forward, and now they are getting relief from having to pay those student debt. And so it would be interesting to see how much mobilization you could get to really make that vital. You would need a lot. You're talking about millions and millions of people. But I think the urgency is there, right?
How many do you think you would need to commit? Because I tweeted this once in a straw poll and asked folks, like, for you to participate, how many people would have to be with you? You know, 10,000, a million, 22 million, you know, because the student debt, Astra Taylor's org, they have done these before with just a few thousand people.
Right. But that was usually on a subset of the debt, like debt for-profit colleges or debt involving, you know, public student loan forgiveness programs, which are people who go into public service like teaching or government. Yeah. And they were supposed to get it relieved and they weren't.
So the argument that could be made that nobody's really making at this point is that so many colleges that aren't literally for-profit colleges are similar in so far as that there was no way, at the time the loans were issued, there was no possible return on the investment that made sense. I remember when I was going to law school, I was told basically that if you don't get into a T14 law school, one of the top 14 law schools, it's basically not worth going because it was the financial crisis, it was all of this. And I was fully prepared to not go to law school until, you know, I got into certain schools. And that, it sounds really ridiculous, but it is true. And you can do the math on the back of a piece of paper, whether or not it's worth taking out $160,000 worth of loans, which become $250,000 over the 10-year period with interest, and how much your earnings are over, you know, if you can get a big firm job because you didn't go to the certain school. And there's so many schools that in no way raise your salary as much as you're going to have to pay those $60,000 a year for 4 years.
We're running a piece actually tomorrow. There's a nationwide walkout happening tomorrow of pharmacists. Mm. Now, the average pharmacy program lasts about 6 or 8 years, and people come out with an average of $174,000 in debt. And the starting salary for a pharmacist at CVS is $45,000 a year.
Oh my God.
Do the math on that, right? And so it's gotten much worse in the pandemic. The workloads are much greater. They're having to give out COVID tests, COVID vaccines, everything that we know about at the pharmacy counter. And what they said is that during the beginning of the pandemic, in order to raise morale, companies like CVS and Rite Aid would give pizza to the pharmacists. And Ryan, so there's a hashtag called Pizza Is Not Enough. And it was started by a pharmacist out in somewhere in the middle of the country. I don't remember where. And they're doing this walkout. And it's part of an independent union effort. Try to raise awareness about the unsuitability of this. And so you could see efforts like that in different professions. And I think that would actually make an interesting, that could make a difference.
I would love that. I would love to do an episode on them.
Yeah. So you just think it's easier logistically to organize it around a certain industry?
Yeah, potentially. I mean, I don't know. I haven't thought about it deeply, but I do know that, it is going to be a huge reckoning, and the way that kind of like the worst version of this in terms of it's the thing nobody's saying, but it might be true, is that the administration is allowing these student debt payments to resume because they want to fight inflation by lowering demand for goods and services, by lowering discretionary income, discretionary spending among millions of people. And if you translate that, what they're literally saying is we need to, lower economic growth, throw some people out of work in order to lower inflation. And first of all, this makes no sense, even from an inflation standpoint, because inflation is being driven by supply chain problems that have nothing to do with consumer spending, number one. Number two, it's just really ghoulish to say that we've decided that inflation is a bigger problem than millions of people who need money for basic necessities, and we're going to cut we're going to increase the amount of money they have to pay in order to try to deal with the inflation thing. It's I mean, I don't want to believe that, but I kind of believe that.
Well, Pri, I know you have to run. Thank you so much for joining us.
This has been great. It's always good to hear from you, David. And I hope to get you on Bad Faith soon. Thanks, Katie. Bye, Leslie. And thank you for triggering everybody on your last Bad Faith appearance, Leslie. That was fun.
Oh, you're welcome.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
I'm going to turn my lights on because you're slowly not seeing me here. So hold on a second.
Like our hope, our belief, our faith in... And what, the electoral system? Not that anyone, especially you, Leslie, definitely never had any of that. There's another, did you see this clip of Psaki being asked about giving out free tests?
Yes, absolutely. Yes, I did.
You should play that.
Yeah.
That's a good one. We can play
what we've done over the course of time. We've quadrupled the size of our testing plan. We've cut the cost significantly over the past few months. And this effort to ensure insurers are you're able to get your tests refunded means 150 million Americans will be able to get free tests.
That's kind of complicated, though. Why not just make them free and give them out?
So this is Jen Psaki, just so David hears it, too. I don't know if you saw this clip. Okay.
So. Done over the course of time. Effort to ensure insurers are you're able to get your tests refunded means 150 million Americans will be able to get free tests.
That's kind of complicated though. Why not just make them free and give them out and have them available everywhere?
Should we just send one to every American?
Yeah,
maybe.
Then what happens if every American has one test? How much does that cost? And then what happens after that?
All I know is that other countries seem to be making them available in greater quantities for less money.
Well, I think we share the same objective, which is to make them less expensive and more accessible, right? Every country is going to do that differently. And I was just noting that, again, our tests go through the FDA approval process. That's not the
same. All right. What do you have to say to that, David?
Well, there's a couple things. I mean, I've been on a kick lately about how government needs to create simpler ways for people to benefit, right? And you can't come up with a harder way for people to benefit from a government program than having to get reimbursed by the insurance industry. So, and it's not on a big expense, right? It's on a $28 two-pack of Binax test kits, right? Who is going to do that? Who is going to, like, you know, put in the slip for the $28, wait 4 to 6 weeks, haggle with their insurance company, and then finally get a check for $28. Nobody's going to do that. And it's the poverty of imagination there on display from Jen Psaki, saying, you know, and the other thing is that there's another way to think about it rather than just, you know, giving out these tests and mailing them to everybody. In other countries, these tests are about a buck, right? And why is that? It's because more tests have been approved in other countries for use. In the United States, and there was a great ProPublica article about this, really only two tests have been approved. The bottleneck, the guy who does the approvals at the FDA of these tests, worked for the two companies that got approved tests.
Oh, wow.
And he has discouraged other companies from going in and trying to get their tests approved. So that's why they're more, is because there's no competition. There are only two tests out there.
What a scam of a country. I mean, we didn't even mention other countries are just giving them to everybody for
free.
They
are, yeah.
They are just giving them away, and she mocks this.
I know, I love that. I love that part. That's the best part of it. Like, oh, well, I guess what should we do?
Like, what do you get for being an American? What do you get for being an American? What do you get for being an American other than, like, complicity in imperialism across the globe? You're not getting anything else from this point on, brother. Her sister, like the cheap consumer goods, we're not getting those. I mean, we never had the health care. I don't know what we're getting for being Americans. It's just it's up for grinding to pulp, I guess.
I mean, interestingly, just last week, the White House issued this initiative that said, I forget how they phrased it, but it was about making things simpler, like, you know, creating a government website that integrates everything from other websites. So there's one-stop shopping. If you have this income, the Social Security Administration can pull your data from other places and sign you up for other benefits. In a vacuum, it's a great initiative. But when you see it in conjunction with all the crappy initiatives that have been put forward, it's like, well, now you've figured out that people, you know, don't want to be your little bureaucrats and filling out forms all day to try to get benefits that they're eligible for.
And something else that I know that we spoke about a little bit on Useful Idiots when you were on Useful Idiots was the patent, the waiver, which is something that, again, I'm just kind of shocked that the United States, although we're better than the EU on this, which kind of surprised me. I'm not used to being like, I'm used to us being the worst of all countries. But the it's just shocking to hear the party and the president who boasts about how science-based that they are, not take a more aggressive role in stamping out COVID around the world in all countries.
Yeah, definitely. This is something where the president kind of surprised people in April by making this announcement that he would agree to the waiver of this intellectual property so that we can manufacture as many of these vaccines as possible. And that was kind of the last we heard of it for several months. Angela Merkel came here. Germany is known to be the main obstacle at the WTO to this. And it makes sense because who is Pfizer partnering with on the vaccine? It's a company called BioNTech that's from Germany. Biden did not engage her in any way on this. He didn't push her to try to force her to get this done. And, you know, what I was saying this time last year is that we have to vaccinate the world very swiftly. And the reason is that this is a global pandemic. And what we know about viruses of this type is that they mutate.
Right.
And when they mutate, they could mutate in a way that escapes the vaccine, that is just so much more transmissible that becomes much more deadly. And that's exactly what we're seeing, right? Like that's exactly what happened first with Delta and now with Omicron. We knew this was going to happen. We knew that if you allow the virus to just sort of flow around in populations, that some sort of mutation was going to happen. And that's why we needed a global effort rather than sort of a nationalistic effort of just trying to vaccinate our own people. And so this was just really foolhardy.
Yeah. And Kamala just said, like, they had no idea that Omicron was coming. They couldn't see it coming.
Oh, that was a terrible statement that she made. That was unbelievable.
I mean, just either does she not know, is she lying, or she's so out of it?
Yeah, I mean, that's the argument we always play, right? Just like stupid or
dumb
lying.
Or disingenuous.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
D&D. You don't. And the funny thing is, you don't have to be an internationalist or even care about people in other countries to understand the way that viruses work. Like, you could be a hardcore nationalist and get that you can't have a nationalistic approach to this.
Absolutely. Yes. This is ultimately about protecting us. By protecting, like, that's the step that Americans always have a hard time taking. It's the same thing with the mask. The mask is about protecting everyone around us, not just protecting us. And that's why it's, it doesn't protect me. I'm taking it off. I don't like how it makes me feel when I breathe.
Right.
That's just the total breakdown here.
Yeah. Well, I just want to... let's see. I'd asked people what should be done to Joe Manchin. Then I had to clarify legally because people were like, oh, I can't say that.
right.
So let me see if there's anything good. And then, of course, people are like, oh, are they going to don't just blame Manchin? I know that. I know I think people now, if they didn't already know, understand that I understand that the Democrats and Biden have a big role to play in this. So. Let's see, any interesting things? Let's see. You know what some people, there's a guillotine gif. That's always funny. But only when it's not serious, obviously. What about going, after his daughter? Can't they just do that?
Well, what do you mean?
For her.
Heather Bresch, the former CEO of Mylan.
Yeah.
Problem is, she's former and she's not involved with Mylan anymore.
Anymore, yeah.
I mean, Biden did try to get some things done here, right? Like, Biden hired, he appointed Manchin's wife to a major job at the Appalachian Regional Commission. He has attempted a few of the things, not everything has been attempted, but a few of the things that you would, if you were trying to, you know, entice someone to vote your way. He's done some of that stuff. I don't know why Manchin still why Manchin still holds a committee chair.
Right? Couldn't he just be that's dismissed one, from that?
But that's more of a Schumer thing than a Biden thing. You know, I mean, I think there's this fear that Manchin isn't going to be in the Democratic Party very long.
Right.
And so they're playing that game of you know, do I hang on to him? Do I try to appease him, or do I attack him? Now, certainly the Biden administration's statement today was very, very cutting in terms of how they depicted Manchin. They were really blindsided by this, I think.
Yeah, I remember this song and dance with Joe Lieberman. From what I understand, Obama kept giving him everything he wanted, and then Joe Lieberman endorsed a Republican for president, is what happened. So I'm not so them handing Joe Manchin a bunch of stuff and then him still saying no. Seems like this is just how they do things, I guess.
Yeah.
Centrist Joes.
Yeah, the curse of the Joes that we have. We have a case of the Joes.
Yeah, case of the Joes, yeah. That's when you give people things and hope that they will be like, when you trust people you shouldn't trust.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's hard to see exactly what can be done. I mean, the difference is that Lieberman was in a Democratic state, right? I mean,
right.
West Virginia voted for Donald Trump by 35 points. It helps Joe Manchin when the Democratic establishment goes after him.
Right.
It helps him in West Virginia when that happens. So it's hard to say exactly, you know, what you can do to win back his favor. That's why I think using the executive authority and
that's just the way,
you know, getting him into a position where he thinks that it'd be better for me and better for my priorities if I actually do something than nothing. Right. That seems to be the only thing I can think of.
Right. Yeah. Just go executive, but then he wouldn't be able to blame it on anyone else. He'd actually have to do it.
Yeah. Which is, you know, so we'll see if he's willing to go that route.
Yeah. Wow. All right. Yeah. We can have a Joe poll. Which Joe is worse? Well, David, thank you so much for joining.
Absolutely.
This was great. Come back again. We should go over your day one piece, item by item. We'll read them out loud. Shame Biden into
there
doing
them. There you go. All right. Thanks a lot, Katie.
Okay. Thanks, David.
Bye.
Don't forget to become Patreon supporters so you can hear the chat that I have with Breonna Joy Gray about Kamala Harris. Thanks again for listening to The Katie Helper Show. If you like the show, please join the Patreon at patreon.com/The Katie Helper Show. Again, that's patreon.com/The Katie Helper Show. Please leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. And as always, we remind you that this show could not happen without the support of our listeners. Our show is produced by me, Katie Helper, Nick Palm. Brad Bloom is our audio engineer and an associate producer on the show. Our researcher is Joshua Bregman. And our theme song is by the band Cordova. See you next time.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up. This one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.